This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
BFM 89.9, you're listening to The Morning Run with Wong Xiaoning and Philip C. It's just gone past 7:37 in the morning. It's Thursday, the 4th of March. And as usual, in about half an hour, we're going to have our breakfast grill. Philip, what's happening today?
So Chuang will be grilling Captain Chester Wu Chee Soon. He's the CEO of the Civil Aviation Authority of Malaysia. Now, if you know, they were downgraded by the US Federal Aviation Administration, FAA, 2 years ago for failing to meet International Civil Aviation Organization, ICAO, safety standards. So what implication has that had? So Captain Chester, who has took the helm last year, joins us on the hot seat to give us an update on CAM's situation, as well as plans to take the civil aviation regulator forward. Additionally, we'll also get into the growing drone industry and regulations surrounding it.
So very interesting stuff. Do tune in after the 8 a.m. news bulletin where you can listen to that conversation. But in the meantime, we're going to be talking about central bank digital currencies because that conversation has been gaining steam lately with China starting large-scale trials for its own digital currency called yuan. And then the European officials have also reported their intentions to launch a digital euro by 2025.
Not only that, the US Federal Reserve is also studying whether to follow suit. And while digital currencies are in an exploratory stage at the moment, how likely will it be the norm in time to come as more and more central banks start considering digital currencies? And you know, we're not talking about Bitcoin here. So what are the implications, risks, and opportunities that come with this?
So these are the questions that we'll be exploring with our guest, Professor Antonio Fatas, a professor of economics at INSEAD Business School. Good morning, Professor. Now, can you just give us a 101 on the difference between central bank digital currencies and what in our mind is cryptocurrencies? For many of us, our only exposure is, you know, Bitcoin.
Yes, good morning. It's clearly a very different type of money. The central bank digital currency, that at least the project that we've seen so far, it has nothing to do with cryptocurrencies. It's sort of a digital representation of the physical banknotes that we're all using today. So the physical banknotes today are issued by the central bank. The central bank is responsible for the value of those. Central bank digital currency just means, can you issue something which is equivalent to a banknote, but it takes form in sort of in the digital world, and we use payments not by handing out a physical piece of paper, but by using our smartphone, our credit card, our watch, whatever mean of payment we use in the digital world.
So just to clarify, you say a digital representation, the features are the same between that and basically what we understand as current currencies?
Exactly. It's the same thing. I mean, today when you go to a store, either you pay using a banknote, which is a physical representation of money issued by the central bank, or you pay issue with a debit card, a credit card, your smartphone. And this is backed by a digital representation of money issued by the private sector, because your money is sitting at a bank, is sitting at a balance with WeChat, with Grab, whatever account you have. Now, what the central bank is doing is creating a digital version of banknotes to sort of compete with the current private versions of digital money that already exist, that have nothing to do with cryptocurrencies and that we're all using all the time.
So what are the potential and the opportunities also for central banks to issue this CBDC? Is it important for central banks to get onto this and explore this field now?
So in some sense, there's still a debate. In some sense, it's not urgent. It's not that important. Central banks are still at the center of the payment system. When you do a digital payment today, you're not using central bank digital money, but your bank has an account at the central bank, which happens to be digital, and that's where the settlement takes place. So central banks are still very much in control of payments. The question is, and that's what they're asking all of them, should we be in control all the way from the back office, which they're already in control, all the way to the front office? Should we offer a digital version of banknotes that is available to everyone, to the public? And that's a question which I don't think is an urgent one. I don't think it's a radical one, but it's an interesting one. Should central banks go all the way to the front office, not just stay in the back office?
A really good point, because looking right, China has been taking some time to look at it. The EU wants to introduce it in 2025, Singapore 2026. Why is it taking so long? Is it due to the lack of urgency or the depth of conversation, or are there other risks involved?
I think it's a combination. I think there's a lack of urgency. I don't think this is the priority for central banks. I think logistically, central banks are not used to offer these front office services. They're not used to open accounts for every person. They're not used to manage these accounts. So from a logistical point of view, you don't want to rush this and get it wrong, because obviously if payments fail, payments by the central bank, that would be a big crisis. So I think it's a combination of that logistical complication. It makes no sense to rush it, but I think it's also the lack of urgency. Payments are working. Central banks have been working really hard to make our digital payments very fast, very efficient, and almost costless. So it's not that there's a massive demand for people to say, I want an alternative way of paying for my goods and services, because most people today have ways to use digital money, which is already satisfying that demand.
But Professor, could this eventually, when it is rolled out, be a threat to the traditional banking landscape that we know of today?
I mean, I think this is the big fear, which is if you create a parallel system of accounts at the central bank, if I'm allowed to have an account at the central bank as an individual, will I just move my money away from normal banks, private banks? In particular, in times of crisis, if I don't trust the commercial banks, should I run to the central bank with my money? And that's the fear. And central banks in their design are thinking about this, and they don't want to compete with commercial banks. They don't want to displace them either. So they're thinking about some creative solutions. Some of them, for example, imply that you cannot have a lot of money, a big balance in your account at the central bank, because this is not a replacement of everything that commercial banks do. It's just an alternative digital form of money that should compete with commercial banks. But this is not about displacing the role of commercial banks play, because commercial banks do many more things than payments. They give mortgages, they give loans, they keep the economy alive.
Yeah, really good point. Just wanted to extend it further. What about then the impact on e-payment and e-wallets that are unique, for example, Touch and Go and Boost in Malaysia? Do you see that having a larger impact then, because their services are not as diversified as banks?
And I think that's another interesting question. So today, a lot of us are using electronic wallets, and in particular, in some countries, they have become very popular. Now, the central bank might end up competing with those electronic wallets. The question is, what can the central bank offer that is better than what those electronic wallets offer today? The only thing I can think of is safety, is this notion that I'll never lose my money if it's at the central bank. But in practice, most of us today are not afraid of losing our money in our e-wallets, because the companies behind are very solid. So if those e-wallets give us some rewards, some points, and they allow us to do these purchases within the ecosystem of these e-wallets, I don't think the central bank will compete with them. I don't think they want to compete with them. So I think it will just be an alternative that will be available for anyone who wants to use it. But I don't think the central bank can replicate the features that these private ecosystems, these electronic wallets, are creating today.
And realistically, though, for CBDCs to gain international acceptance and to work, I mean, among different countries, doesn't there eventually have to be a common global standard that addresses the different sovereign monetary policies and even privacy standards? I mean, how achievable is this?
I mean, we don't need international standards. We've been running money for many centuries without international standards. Every country has its own monetary policy, its own way to do payments, and the national systems don't connect very well. That's why cross-border payments tend to be costly and tend to be difficult. So you don't have to go there. Now, having said that, if the whole world goes digital, it seems natural to ask a question, can we take this opportunity to create those standards? Can we have systems that easily talk to each other? So I don't think that's a necessity, but it's clearly an opportunity to improve on cross-border payments by adopting standards which are sort of similar across countries.
All right. Thank you for your time. That was Professor Antonio Fatas, a professor of economics at INSEAD Business School, telling us some very interesting things about digital currencies by central banks. So the big question, will they run parallel with the traditional banking landscape and in a way be competition? And he says, no, not really. But I'm like, I see potential conflict though.
I do. And what struck me was he kind of indicated this wasn't really an urgent item on the agenda.
Well, because things work at the moment, right?
Things work at the moment. So trying to understand what features will really truly disrupt will be a key question, I think.
But I think this is something that will be constantly evolving. It's not the end of the discussion. But up next, we'll be speaking to Hezri Samsuri of Kereta.my on whether Malaysia should have an end-of-life vehicle policy. Stay tuned for that. BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.